Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Jason Freed from Brainerd, Minnesota on the show. This is our first time having Jason on. He's in the summertime. He's a fishing guide up on Leech Lake and Lake Vermilion. And, you know, listening to Jason's life story, just getting to know him in this interview, it's just really fun. He's got a very unique story. He's not from the Brainerd Lakes area. He didn't grow up, you know, on the shores of Leech Lake or Vermilion where he guides now. And so his story to get to that point in life is very interesting, I think. And we definitely get into talking about the fishing there in northern Minnesota. You think about there's definitely some capital fisheries that we highlight on this show at times, like Leech Lake or Lake Vermilion. You know, they're just a couple that really represent the fishing in the whole area. There's so many lakes around there. And when we talk, like on this interview, talking about Vermilion, we're talking about Leech Lake and just talking about Jason's, you know, walleye fishing experience, it really represents the whole area. There's so much great fishing up there. So let's get to it. We've got Jason Freed. We're talking northern Minnesota walleye fishing and the guide life. Let's do it. Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their Eye Candy Kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the Eye Candy Kit. This episode of the JMO Podcast is brought to you by Shields. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Experience the thrills of an unforgettable fishing experience like never before with Flop Industries. Whether you're a novice angler or a seasoned veteran, Flop Industries products are meticulously designed to enhance your fishing experience when it's time to hit the water. Join our community by visiting flopindustries.com and elevate your passion for fishing with gear that matches both your skills and your style. That link is in the description of this podcast. Where did this career really, truly begin? Where did this passion really begin for you, man? Go ahead.
Well, I would say I definitely have kind of a non-traditional story, except for considering where I live now in the Brainerd Lakes area. And, you know, I kind of live in one of the, you know, quote, fishing meccas of, you know, the United States and in Minnesota in general. And I grew up as a farm kid in Northwest Iowa, grew up on a farm for most of my life and end up living in town for a little while. But I always loved to fish. And so, I mean, for me, fishing when I was growing up was fishing for, you know, largemouth bass and bluegills and farm ponds. And I still have memories of catching a 12 1/4 inch bluegill out of a farm pond and then giving it to a buddy because he was getting into taxidermy, and then he totally just completely butchered it. And it was awful. It was, and now I look back, but then the farm pond froze out, and but it's just a great memory. And there's one of the biggest, you catch this fish and it's just a giant and whatever. And so, yeah, I fish in farm ponds, did a lot of that. And then, my passion is definitely more walleye, and I've grown into smallmouth now as well. But, you know, for me, walleye fishing was, you know, putting the waders on and going up to the Iowa Great Lakes, going to Okoboji and Spirit Lake, Silver Lake and Lake Park. And we would, my high school buddies and I, we'd put the waders on and we'd go up and we'd walk out at, you know, 8 o'clock at night, as we got in the spring now and walleye opener. And we would walk out and we'd do the old cast and shad wraps deal. And that's kind of how I kind of got into walleye fishing initially. And then doing some slip bobber fishing as well. And so, I mean, it was always there. My passion was always there. You know, in college, I did some, you know, stream trout fishing over in northeastern Iowa near Decorah. And that was fun and everything. But I think my real passion for northern Minnesota and what we have in the, you know, for resources in Minnesota, obviously just goes back to, like, for many, probably family vacation. And we used to go to Lake Vermilion every summer up in northeastern part of Minnesota. And you know, I can still just vividly remember everything, you know, from those trips. And, you know, I was the kid who, you know, finally my parents would let me take the little 14-foot, you know, Lund with the little 15-25 horse motor on it. And they would say every year I got to go a little bit farther, you know, and they'd be like, all right, you got to go in Larson Bay today, or you got to be here. And so, but I grew up just just extreme passion for that lake and learning the lake. And for me, it was just at that time, you know, when you're young, you're just casting. I mean, you're just catching fish, right? And whether it was panfish out the dock or bass or casting for pike, or, you know, one of my biggest pikes of my life came when I was in sixth grade, and I caught a 42-inch pike on our last day of the trip on Lake Vermilion on a spinnerbait, and still sits in my office at home. But that's for, I think, to me, the real itch for this really kind of grew. And then as life kind of goes on, you obviously life, you know, takes you down different paths. And I went to college, and I, you know, became a teacher and a coach, you know, kind of my first 5-6 years out of college, I was in a small town in southeastern Minnesota. And you know, there's some trout streams down there, and the Mississippi River's just right down the road. And, you know, we used to go fish we fished the Mississippi River a lot throughout college. You know, then when I was living in southeast Minnesota, we'd go over and fish, you know, off Dresbach Dam and backwaters, and we, you know, whatever. And then obviously then as I progress and where I move now, I've been in Brainerd now for 15 years. And this is really where I think really kind of came to be, and kind of how you and I met. And, you know, we meet over, you know, social media and the web. And I kind of started figuring some things out when I was up here and living in the Brainerd Lakes area, and obviously having a passion for it, and being a school teacher and being a coach, you kind of have that opportunity to, you know, guide in the summer and fish tournaments. And it just, and it goes hand in hand. Like, some of the best fishing guides out there, I mean, there's a ton of great fishing guides, and some of the best ones out there are educators, they're teachers. And that's what you do as a fishing guide. You educate people, and then you throw the coaching piece in for me, which I think goes hand in hand with guiding, because it's energetic and you're getting people pumped up and it's exciting, and you're teaching and all that kind of stuff, and you're coaching people through things. And I actually met a guy up here and through the old Fishing Minnesota website. And we just got connected, and that was back in the day when the forums used to be really big, you know, kind of before we had, you know, Facebook and all that kind of stuff. And we fished and fished a lot. And I bought a boat, and I was up here, and another boat. And eventually he's like, you know, you're pretty good at this. And he goes, how about I just have you help me with some overflow trips. And so that's been 14 years ago now. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And that first guide trip I did was just like, all right, this, I enjoy this. I have fun taking people fishing. And then from there, it just kind of, just connections, you know, how life is. And I got to meet, you know, and know Toby Cavallivog and Jeff Anderson with Leisure Outdoor Adventures. And they were kind of just getting the ball rolling with a new guide service. And they were, you know, they took 3 or 4 of us other teacher educators, and we're like, hey, you know, we're going to need some help. And then pretty soon what was going to be maybe just a handful of trips turns into like 30 trips your first summer. And you're like, oh, okay, this is, there's something to this. And then from there, it's just, I kind of really grew a passion for helping those guys grow their business, and have kind of then taken on the role of, you know, they used to call me the president, cause I did all kinds of stuff and for the company. And now I've kind of dialed things back, because I'm also the head football coach in Brainerd. So I got to kind of balance things a little bit throughout the summertime and be around for some football things here and there and stuff. So I now kind of help not only guide for the company, but I also kind of work with the promotional side of things and some of the sales pieces of things, and also promoting our new market. I do a lot of my time in guiding over on Lake Vermilion now, which is ironic, right? I mean, that's where I grew my passion for the sport. And 4 years ago, I was up there on vacation, and I got a call, And, you know, one of the things I think we've done really well as a guide service is just really grow our brand and our footprints. And I got a call from a resort up there and who I've used to stay there. And they're like, "You're up on vacation?" I'm like, "Yep." And they're like, "Come on over. We want to, you know, we want to talk to you." And I went over, we started talking. They're like, "Hey, we need a fishing guide here in the summer. Would you ever be interested?" I'm like, this was like my dream. Like, come back to Lake Vermilion, be a fishing guide on Lake Vermilion. And I, after a lot of thought, and I'm very fortunate, I have a wife who supports all my passions in life, and fortunate I have got older daughters now, and one that's in college, one that's going to be a senior next year. And so they're always busy in the summer, and be honest, they'd rather just do their thing than worry about their dad all the time. So I'm fortunate to get spend a lot of time over there now and help grow our business. And so we kind of have our footprint in different spots now, but it's just super interesting how life kind of sometimes comes full circle. And going from the, you know, kid that was living in Northwest Iowa, going, you know, fishing farm ponds and going on family vacations to Lake Vermilion. And I remember going out with fishing guides over on Lake Vermilion, and rest in peace, Gary Nordley is one of those guys who was an English teacher from Blue Earth, Minnesota, who used to give me so much crap when I was, you know, out the boat with him as this, you know, seventh grade kid. And then another guy, Terry Schulberg, who's a fishing guide over there, retired now. And I just remember telling those guys, I'm like, this is like, you know, when you're a kid, you think that's the dream job, right? To be a fishing guide. And then they kind of him and haw and bought it. But they're like, yeah, you know, but then as you start to look at it, you're like, you know, this is something that you can make work, you know, and you've got the Tony Roaches of the world who are full-time fishing guide all the time. And they make it work, and they do an excellent job, and they're so great at it. And then you got guys like myself and Toby and you know, who are guys who kind of carve that other piece of their life out and say, I'm going to be a fishing guy, but I'm also going to be a, you know, high school educator and a coach. And it all kind of works. And I think that's kind of the fun thing about it. And I, you know, if there's people out there listening, and you know, it is a profession that, you know, you gotta put your time and work into it, but it starts with a passion, and you gotta love it. And more so, you gotta love it. Just educate people and have people in your boat and understand that when you get them out there, you gotta teach them, you gotta coach them, and you gotta embrace the fact that for some of those people, it was like me. They are there on their vacation, and this is their time to fish, and this is their time to enjoy, you know, their life and what they got going on.
I want to dig into a couple of those things, because I think it's meaningful. Like, but I think you're right when you say, you know, the educators or, you know, the school teachers. You know, I mean, Toby, I've had him on a few times. You know, I think another one out here, a good, really good friend of our crew here, Matt Leibel, he guides on Lake Sakakawea. He's a school teacher. Yep. He's just the nicest guy ever. I think that, you know, I think there's many different ways to be successful as a fishing guide. And you know, there's lots of personalities. I mean, you can, you know, not everybody has to do it the same, but there's definitely just such a flavor to, you know, being a teacher, at least having that professional experience and being able to translate that into, you know, sort of the service aspect of being a fishing guide. When you think about yourself and the kind of guide that you want to be, you know, for your clients, like, what are some of those, like, teacher, you know, characteristics that you bring to the table?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's huge. And I mean, it, especially for people who are maybe getting into it or thinking about it, you know, and I think that's one of the educator piece and the guide piece really go hand in hand, like you're talking about. And I think the number one thing, and I kind of mentioned earlier, but like, you have to put it into perspective, like, you, that's their trip and they're hiring you, and it's your job is to serve them. And as a teacher and a coach, my job is to serve my students and my players. And when I'm a fishing guide, my job is to serve my clients. And that, which means I got to be ready to go. And I mean, there's so many things. I mean, like, you got to be organized, you know, if you're a coach teacher, you got to be organized, you know, and I've got a little of that OCD in me, and like, my boat's going to be clean and this stuff's going to be organized, and I'm going to have slip bobber rods tied up, and I'm gonna have Lindy rig rods and jig rods, and I don't want to sit there and mess around. I want to be able to go to the next thing and do different things, and you know, but I think it's putting that whole experience together. And I'm a very, like, you know, if you were to categorize me as a teacher and a coach, I'm a relationship-based person. And so when I have people on my boat, like, that is first and foremost to me. Like, I want to create a relationship with those people on the boat. I want them to be comfortable around me. I want them to kind of know me. I want them to know my background, and I want to be in it. Because if they're comfortable, it like totally takes the whole like anxiety about, oh, okay, we're going on this trip. We're going to be with this person for 6 to 8 hours. We don't know what they're like. We don't, I mean, all that kind of stuff. And now all of a sudden you get in the boat and it just kind of just, and they fill you out for the first 20, 30 minutes. And they're and usually, you can just see their shoulders just relax. And then when they relax, they're enjoying themselves. And so that's my job. I got to serve. And I, it goes hand in hand as like an educator and a coach. And so, you know, and I think that's number two. Number two would be, you got to be patient. Like, you know, like in my classroom or on the football field, like not every one of my players or students is at the same point in the same spot in the same talent level or ability. And the same thing's going to happen in the fishing boat. Like, I'm going to have an angler who, I mean, we laugh about it all the time, who's going to hold the rod upside down right away, maybe, or, you know, they're going to miss a couple fish, or, you know, or I could tell story after story, and we laugh, and fishing guides could literally write books and they would be bestsellers. But you got to be patient with people, and you got to be willing to just step them through it and find different ways to educate them and teach them that it might make more sense to them. And you got to be patient. And I think that's really hard. And I see that sometimes with young, you know, sometimes younger guys, especially who haven't been doing it as long, you know, they lose patience because they want to catch fish and they want to catch fish. And sometimes you really got to take a step back and say, okay, like we all want to catch fish right now, but we also want to make sure that nobody's frustrated in the boat and everybody's feeling good about what's going on. And everybody kind of has their plan and what's going on. And there's this, you know, a strategy to everything. And then as I learned, the more I get people educated about it and the more they're comfortable in my boat and we're kind of having those conversations and we're connecting, like it's funny how all of a sudden fish will just start end up on the line and people are reeling them in and they're having fun and they're hooting and hollering. And then I think that's the other piece is then you got to bring energy to the boat. And, you know, we've all been in that classroom growing up as a kid, and you've got that teacher up in front who's the monotone, you know, just working their way through the notes and you're writing it down and the kids are falling asleep. And that's the third thing. I think you got to bring, you got to bring the energy to the boat. You got to have passion. When you got to high five them, whether it's a 13 inch walleye or a 29 inch walleye. And if they catch a rock bass or something, you got to laugh about it and have fun. And it just doesn't matter. And then it's like, it just becomes contagious in the boat. Right. And it just changes the whole environment in the boat and you create this environment. And that would be the last thing I would say. You got to create an environment that like people love to be part of. And if you can create that environment size, you know, my 21 foot pro guide, if I can create that environment in there for the next 6 to 8 hours, like people are going to get done. And honestly, like maybe we go out and we catch, you know, 20 walleyes on the day, you know, we got to work hard at it. Right. We catch a few things here and there, and maybe it wasn't a stellar bite, but by the end of the day, if you fish 6 to 8 hours with those people and they laughed and they had fun and they were telling jokes and whatever, and they get back to the dock, they remember the fish you catch and they remember the things you taught them, but they also remember the stories and then making fun of people and, you know, such and such happening and so-and-so lost this fish and we all laughed about it. And so, like I said, you know, you got to be organized. You got to be patient. You got to be able to form relationships. You got to create an environment that people want to be in. And if you can do that, like, to me, that's what makes really successful fishing guides is obviously you got to know fishing and you got to be able to do the fishing and you got to be able to adapt. And there's going to be days it just doesn't happen. Then there's going to be days you look like an all-star, but on those days where it's a grind, you got to be able to get things going in your boat in other ways where people kind of takes their mind off and the pressure off of catching a fish and puts it more into the sense of like, we're having a great time and the fish is the bonus. And that's kind of how I look at my classroom and in the football field. Like, if I know my players loved coming to practice because we have an environment that's there and I know they're going to continue to get better, the winning and all that kind of stuff, the test scores, all that kind of stuff, that's all just going to take care of itself.
Dude, you said so much there that I think is just really, really meaningful, whether it's a prospective client, you know, listening to that. I mean, that's the kind of guide you want to be with. You know, somebody that just has that perspective and just knows it. But, when you mention, you know, younger guys or just novice, you know, just somebody that wants to get into guiding because they feel like they can catch fish and they want to find a way to, you know, monetize it so they can go fishing every day. But not being able to really encapsulate all that, not being able to have that awareness that, I think that's true where for a lot of people, you really got to stick it out. You got to, you know, you got to be in it for years, especially if you start young. But somebody like you, you know, you and Toby, you work so well together, but it's like, you know, you already had that life experience. So you probably came in like you were a 10-year veteran, you know? I mean, like you say, the fishing is sort of like another part of the conversation, and we'll talk fishing in this conversation for sure. Yep. But yeah, I just think that it's so important to be able to sort of articulate that, you know, because, yeah, I mean, I think that's so true, whether it's somebody that wants to be a guide or, you know, is thinking that they want to be a guide, right? Those conversations are a dime a dozen on the street, but do you really want to be a guide? Do you really know, you know, what you're in for?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, managing people's expectations and managing yep. the emotions and all those different personalities and, you know, bringing energy to the boat. That's the kind of guide you're looking for. Or if you want to be a guide someday, you should be listening to this for sure. And if you're a guide that's a few years in and you're questioning yourself, maybe you got to, you know, reevaluate some of those aspects of your game. I think that is so true. But yeah, man, no, I appreciate that a lot. But, you know, one thing I'm just curious, like, you know, you're talking about, you know, some of the places that you moved around. You didn't move around for fishing necessarily. It's more, you know, other aspects of life, your job and career and things like that kind of moving you around. But like, and the fishing was just sort of always there a little bit. Do you ever think back and maybe some of those, you know, specific experiences or moments, you know, was there some tournaments in there I haven't heard about yet? Like when were you, do you feel like you were exposed or you reached, you know, sort of that level of angling that sort of brings you to where you're at today?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, for me, honestly, from a walleye fishing standpoint, I mean, I had been kind of, you know, exposed throughout the years and I had done things and whatever. And then when those guys, when Toby and Jeff brought me on with Leisure Outdoors, you know, I mean, we're guiding on Leech Lake, right? Walleye is king, right? And I had fished on Leech and had spent time on Leech, you know, whether it was, you know, a few trips here and there, ice fishing and such, but now you're talking about 110,000 acres, right? And you gotta succeed, right? And you gotta guide. And so I think, well, for me, I think the number one thing is just our team that we have with Leisure Outdoor Adventures. We lean on each other. We help one another. We educate each other. And so, you know, we look at guys like Toby. Like, I mean, Toby for me is by far one of my mentors when it comes to walleye fishing. I mean, he's taught me just an absolute ton. And you know, and so you sit down, you listen to those people, and then you soak it in, right? And you know, you listen to the guys like that, and you listen to, you know, longtime fishing guide Rick Runquist on the lake. I mean, for I don't know how many hours I've spent talking to him about Leech Lake and just learning the history of it and learning the lake. And you know, but I think we as guides, we just, you know, I mean, it's when you're into it, you got to spend time and on the water, and you got to go out there and you got to look at things, you got to break it down. And so a lot of, I would say, a lot of my, you know, prowess when it comes to walleye fishing is learning and listening, but it's going out and applying and being willing to fail. I mean, I talk about it all the time as a coach, like you can't fear failure, right? I mean, it's going to happen in fishing. You are going to go out and you're going to fail. And so you just can't be scared of it. And you can't be, you know, you can always say it's one of the, you know, twin thieves in life, right? You can't be scared of failure and judgment, and it's going to happen from time to time. And I could probably talk about multiple guide trips where I tucked my tail between my legs in the end, but it made me want to go out and get better. Right. And so, and then, you know, you take that lake and you start breaking it down and you start learning it in different parts, you know, and then every summer you kind of would pick up on different things, and pretty soon you got patterns. And then every year you kind of start saying, okay, roughly this time of year, things kind of start doing this. And then you go all, but I mean, for me, it was like on that lake like that, I'm like, you know, for anybody, I mean, when you go fish, I'm like, I'm going to the southeast corner of Leech Lake today, and I'm going to spend 6 hours down there, and I'm going to, no matter what, I'm going to drive structure, I'm going to learn it, I'm going to try things, I'm going to pick up. And then pretty soon you're like, oh, I've got a handful of spots down there I feel good with. And then you just kind of start pretty soon, like looking at your map, and you're like, after, and it takes a long time. And I would say after probably about 5 years, 6 years of guiding on Leech with those guys, I think I was finally felt like, okay, I got, you know, I'm comfortable, like throughout the summer. I got the phases down. I got the seasons. I got the, you know, the movements and different things. And then, you know, I started getting into fishing tournaments some as well. And Chuck Hassey's one of our guides. Him and I were tournament partners for quite a while. And And we kind of got onto a pattern on Leach for a long time, a shallow pitching pattern, and on the sand, which is Leech Lake's full of sand flats. And we ended up winning Leech Lake Walleye Classic. But you talk about failure, literally the year, I think it was the year prior, we just tanked. I mean, it was awful. Like, it was just not good. And you know, here you are, these fishing guides on this lake, and you know, but what I learned was, it comes into play with guiding too, is like, when you're a fishing guide, you have a million spots running through your head, right? Wind's blowing out of the northwest, you know, it's this time of year, and you're just rattling off spots A through F, and you're like, oh yeah, remember, yeah, we got to go spots down here too, you know? And so what we learned in that year that we just tanked, and it helped me with guiding too, was like, we just ran all over the lake. I couldn't tell you how many gallons of gas we burned in the Lund, but the problem is we spent too much time with our lines out of the water and not enough time with our lines in the water. And the next year we told ourselves, we're going to hold ourselves to this area. Once we kind of found a pattern and we're like, these are our five to six spots. We are confident in these spots, but we're going to fish. We aren't going to sit there and run all over. And the temptation's there. We're like, oh man, we could go here. And we stuck with it. And the light, you know, all the stars aligned, and we literally had and it was one of the two most epic days of fishing I've ever had. But I go back to that with Chuck, and the reason why we won is because we've obviously got a pattern that worked, but we fished and we put fish in the boat and we sorted through fish and we put together two great bags. And then I think from there, that was just a confidence booster for myself and obviously for Chuck. And now, and Chuck's just doing a spectacular job now fishing tournaments. And I'm able to still balance some tournaments, and he's fishing more circuits, which is great. And I support him. And then from there, I think I just start getting more confidence and then willingness to try things. And I think the biggest thing for a fishing guide is when you get to the point where you're on the body of water and you're like, we're just going to go fishing today. Like, we're going to see what the lake's giving us, and we're going to adapt and we're going to figure things out. And it might take us a couple hours. But it's kind of that piece of the, you know, put piece in the puzzle. And that's, you know, I think what Toby's always really taught me as well as a mentor is like, you know, not every day is the same day, not every year is the same year, and you got to be willing to adapt. And now with the adaptation of, you know, zebra mussels and invasive species, and your bodies of water are changing, a lake like Leech Lake has changed even more. The way it fished when I first started guiding to the way it fishes now is completely different. And so it's just, you have to be willing to adapt and change. And so for me, that's, I would say my confidence really started to grow after those first 5-6 years. And then, you know, winning that tournament out there on Leech with Chuck, and then just continue to grow and evolve and get comfortable and on the lake. And then for me, then, like I said, where things really changed was then when I got that opportunity 4 years ago, throwing my way about Lake Vermilion, and I'm talking with Jeff and Toby, and I'm like, hey, what do we think we should do? It's a great opportunity. We're talking about being able to add more guide trips to our thing. We could grow our business more. We could expand more. And so that was kind of a leap of faith. But then it was also kind of like going back to, I mean, even though I'd been on the lake many times in my life, many times. But it's different when you go fish on vacation versus now all of a sudden you're picking people up the dock and you gotta perform, right? And so now I'm on a lake, and it was honestly kind of like starting all over.
Yeah.
You know, and so which was tough. And, you know, I had good days and I had bad days. But in the end, I actually think it was really, really good for me, because I think it was kind of like a reset, right? And it kind of made you like rethink everything a little bit more and reprogram your brain a little bit, and maybe go back to things that you were doing that you can still apply, but also be like, hey, that doesn't work on Lake Vermilion. Like, what we do on Leech Lake doesn't work on Lake Vermilion, and we have to adapt and change because the fish are different and they relate differently. And so in the end, I actually think it was a leap of faith, and I do miss Leech Lake sometimes. And I still guide on Leech Lake in the spring. And then June I go, you know, I head over to Vermilion and I fish over there. But I think it's made me a better angler, and I think it's made me a better guide. And it's forced me to also become more of a multi-species guide, which I really enjoy. And that's one of the things I love about Lake Vermilion as a guide. And if you're a guide out there, you know, an aspiring guide, like, there's no, you really should try to be a multi-species person as much as you can, because there's times where you do have to say, it's, hey, this, if I'm a football coach and this defense I'm calling isn't working, there's no sense keeping the call. We got to do something different, right? And so sometimes, man, it's flat calm and the walleyes are just not cooperating. All right, we're going smallmouth bass fishing. And all of a sudden, what goes from a what probably was going to be a grinder 4-6 hour trip where, you know, people might have felt okay, to all of a sudden now you pull 30 smallmouth bass in and they're jumping all over and people are hooting and hollering. And then you drop them off and they completely forget about the walleye fish. And they're like, that bass fishing was unbelievable. We can't, let's do that again next time, you know? And so, so that ties in that guiding thing too. You talk about, like, you gotta be versatile. You gotta be willing to change things up. And I think that as a younger guide, I was always like, walleye, I got to do this because that's what you feel like people wanted. And now as I've evolved in guiding, I've learned that, like, it's okay to mix things up and give people options. And because in most instances, people just want to catch fish and they want something tugging on the end of the line, whether it's a smallmouth or a pike or a walleye or a crappie, it doesn't matter. And so being over on Vermilion now has really kind of opened my eyes even more to guiding. And I would say one of my mentors over there is Billy Rosner. Billy's a great friend of mine. He's been on the One Pro staff for decades, and he's a longtime fishing guide on Lake Vermilion. And he's kind of been one of those guys I can just lean on, and he tells me stories and all kinds of different things. But he also kind of puts life into perspective when you're over there too and such. So, you know, you look at all those things, you got to have those people that you can always, you know, kind of confide in and such. And so, you know, like I said, it was kind of a leap of faith when I went over there. And, you know, I go from having a team of guys on Leech, you know, 7, 8, 9 of us, to now there's only 2 of us over on Vermilion. And the guy who joined me couldn't join me till July. So now I'm over there by myself for the whole month of June. And you're like, what am I doing? You know, but, and like I said, it kind of put things into perspective. I'm like, you got this. You just got to reset. You got to, you know, kind of prepare yourself and go out every day and just kind of attack it.
This episode of the JMO podcast is brought to you by Shields. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their eye candy kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the eye candy kit. Experience the thrills of an unforgettable fishing experience like never before with Flop Industries. Whether you're a novice angler or a seasoned veteran, Flop Industries products are meticulously designed to enhance your fishing experience when it's time to hit the water. Join our community by visiting flopindustries.com and elevate your passion for fishing with gear that matches both your skills and your style. That link is in the description of this podcast. A lake that you fished your whole life, and that lake taught you so much, but then you level go to just, like, you know, the stratosphere of walleye fishing, like you say, you know, you're just like in a hotbed right there. I know all those guys are just absolute sticks that you run with, and, you know, that had to have just been like drinking from a fire hose as far as, like, the information and all that. And then to go back to Lake Vermilion, it's like you left a boy and now you're a man. Like yeah, tell me right. Those stories and like really just kind of detailing like what the trips are like now and how you look back and maybe sort of smile or giggle at some of the things you used to do.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you take Leech Lake, for example, and Leech Lake is huge. I mean, it's, you know, giant lake, 110,000 acres, and it's sand flats, and it's, you know, rock reefs, and, you know, and, but it fishes way different, you know, than Lake Vermilion, or so to speak. I mean, there's times I'm like, for example, like, we used to pull spinners all the time during the Mayfly hatch on Leech. before the water got so clear. And now when you do it, you got to use planer boards and different things like that. But then I go over Vermilion and people are like, for my first 2 years over there, and you talk to these guides and they're like, you spinners do not work on this lake. I'm like, what? You know, I'm like, there's whatever. Right. And so, but then you start thinking about it, but then you're learning this lake and you're like, all right, I got to stick with what it's anything. You got to stick with what you're good at. Right. Initially. Right. And so me, I'm a, you know, I am a live, I mean, still a live bait guy, but I love Lindy rig and fishing with people. It's easy. You know, that's everything with clients. You got to do what they can do. Right. I mean, you can't have people do something that they're not capable, because then they're just going to get frustrated and you're going to get frustrated and whatever. So I stuck to what I do, you know, and I think about like kind of your main things when it comes to walleye fishing. You got, you know, rig fishing, jig fishing, bobber fishing, and you know, some, you know, pitching like things like jigging wraps and, you know, reaction style baits and things like that. So I kind of stuck to that in my first couple of years there, and worked with another one of our guides who's now down in Florida, guiding down there. And he and I kind of started to piece together, like, you know, Vermilion is this Canadian shield lake, and it's the only Canadian shield lake inside the state of Minnesota, not counting the border ones. And it's way different than Lake Vermilion, and you got endless amounts of rock structure on that lake. It's incredibly, I mean, it just blows your mind, right? And so you're sitting there and you look at all these reefs and you're like, man, all these reefs got to hold fish, right? And you're just racking your brain, and they got just giant new boulders the size of boats and cars down there. And but then, so him and I just initially, we tried to tackle all these reefs and we're thinking like, man, this just isn't right. And why doesn't this reef hold fish? And we'd find them here and there, but sometimes they're in the rocks. And this was all kind of pre forward facing sonar. I mean, before it really started coming along. And then, so we went back to being like, all right, what are we good at? Right. Well, we're good at reading side imaging, side scan, looking at, you know, areas that have sand, gravel, you know, maybe mud. And that's where him and I, as we work together over there, and how I've learned now with my electronics over there, is like, I went to where I'm comfortable, right? And I started working weed lines, and I started looking at transition areas, and I try to find those sand spots in some of those areas. And I think everybody for years, and this is great, like everybody in Vermilion is like, well, there's fish in the rocks. Got to fish the rocks. Got to fish the rocks. Well, there are fish in the rocks, and I'll get to that here shortly, but there's also a boatload of walleyes in the weeds, and there's fish in the sand, and there's fish on gravel, and you gotta search for them, right? And so that's what we did. We looked, and we finally started finding areas that were holding fish, and we went back to what we did, pitching jigs, long line and Lindy rig, throwing a bobber at them. And I'm like, okay, this is how I fished on Leech Lake. I'm applying it to Lake Vermilion now. Right. Depth might be different, you know, different things like that, time of day, whatever. But it kind of gave me that confidence, like, okay, I'm on this lake. I fish this lake a lot, but like I said, it's way different when you got a guide, you got to perform, you got to have multiple spots and things like that. But then I go back to like, okay, then what's the next thing I got to do? I got to trust what I see. Well, it's the wind, right? Well, wind drives fish, wind blown points, wind blown shorelines, you know? And so, you know, you see, you kind of go back to, you like, he's got to take a big deep breath sometimes, be like, okay, what have I taught myself? What have I learned? And now I just got to apply it to this lake, you know? And so you start looking at those, all right, it's this time of year, the mayfly hatch, you know, transition, the mud, you know, those kinds of things as we progress. And then, you know, and as I've learned now in the last 4 years, it fishes similar in terms of seasonal movements and transitional patterns and different things like that. But you just have to be willing to say, okay, I got to fish around some structure here. And that's for me now, that's where the electronics pieces come into such a big play. And I think that's where people get so frustrated on a lake like Lake Vermilion, is because there are so many rocks and you can't just drag a Lindy rig across the reef, because you're going to be retying a Lindy rig every 2 minutes and you're going to get frustrated. Right. And so that's where, you know, for us now, like the way I educate people when I'm over there, like, if you don't have forward-facing sonar, and so now two and a half summers ago, I got forward-facing sonar for the first time, and it can now, but now it's completely changed how I look at rock structures. And so now, and then not only do I feel like I have those areas that I first taught myself, the old sand patterns, all that kind of stuff. Now I'm like, now I got confidence in the rock reefs. Cause before I had that, I honestly felt like I was throwing a bobber out on top of a rock reef and just thinking like, am I fishing in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean right now? Cause I feel like I am. Right. But now obviously forward facing sonar changes a lot of those things, but it also changes like, okay, this is how fish set up on these reefs. this is, they hide behind the biggest rock. All right. They're going to be somewhere near the biggest rock. And so you end up finding those things in those strategic spots. And so now I've been able to help break that down more. And I've become a much better fisherman there, in regards to using that as a tool. And that's been really important. But at the same time, you keep talking electronics. So I tell my people, all right, you don't have forward facing sonar. You're on Lake Vermilion. All right. You're going to slip bobber fish. How in the heck do you know which reefs to pull up on? Well, this is the thing I learned without forward facing sonar. I can drive up on some of these reefs and be careful, because not all of them, you know, some of them are shallow. I don't want anybody breaking a prop. But if you see life on a reef, this is what I've learned on, and this is probably pretty on most lakes, but Canadian Shield Lakes, you got all these. If you see life, you see bait, you see some stuff on your 2D or down scan, which most people have in their boats, I tell them stop and fish it. Like I said, because more than likely there are walleyes there, and you just got to figure out where they're positioned on that piece of structure, right? And that's really held true for me. And now I'll pull up at times, and if I see that, I'll just drop it down. Then I'll start looking, and then I'll start shining out forward facing sonar. I'm like, okay, they're over there. So it just kind of took my process and narrowed it down a little bit quicker. But, and that's what I tell people. And then I'll tell people at the end of the week, they'll call me and be like, hey, we did great. You know, I mean, maybe they didn't catch 25, but they went out and caught 7-8 walleyes one evening off a reef. And that's, for some people, is a great night. And so that's really been great for me to kind of take the technology piece. And then the other piece I do out there besides that is, people hate getting snagged. Like, getting snagged is the worst thing, because you hate retying.
Yeah.
It's awful, right? And I, as a fishing guide, like, you gotta sit in the back of the boat, and you might have three people break off on something, and you're gonna retie them. That's what you do. People don't retie. You retie, right?
Yeah.
So I,
and it now, comes out of your pocket, your margin.
Exactly. Yes. Right. And so the other thing I've really learned out there is, you know, obviously boat control is a major piece, and as a fishing guide, that is probably the one thing you have to learn through trial and error. And early on, if you got people in the boat, you got lines in the water, you are trying to manage their lines, you're trying to keep their lines down the water, you got bait on their lines, you're doing all these things for people. Meanwhile, you're trying to work a contour, and you're doing all this thing, you got pressure on your shoulders, you know, all of a sudden someone catches a fish, and now you got to keep the boat going in the right direction, you got to net the fish, you got all these different things, and so it's super stressful. But for me, boat control is obviously something now I really don't fret about that much. I can get up, go net a fish, and I know my boat's going where it's supposed to be going. Still, I can step away from the trolling motor or whatever. But now I tell people, like, if you have side imaging or side scan, like, just find where the edge of the rocks are, right? And so if you want to pull a Lindy rig, don't pull it over top of the reef. Find the edge of the rocks, get your boat positioned with how the wind is, and just work the side, you know, the edge of the rocks. You're going to have the occasional boulder and things like that, but you might get a snag here and there. But I'm able to do stuff. Like, I love long lining a crawler. Like, it is one of my most favorite ways to catch a walleye, is throw the old rig out there, the long line, the crawler, and a bead, and the just wham, you know? And so, but people get so frustrated because they think they got to be in the rocks, and they don't have to be in the rocks. Those fish will come out of the rocks. They come eat that bait sometimes. So, you know, those are things I've learned on Vermilion. And, you know, you said the month of June is a spectacular month. It's can be really, really, really good for catching big walleyes. And when I say big, I'm talking a lot of 25 to 28, 29 inches. You get the occasional 30 here and there. But it's fun because in the month of June, that first half of June, typically all depends on ice out and everything, but you can be catching walleyes at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and 3 or 4 feet of water on top of a rock pile. And people are like, people's minds are just blown. They're like, oh, and you'll tell, like we had trips last year where we told people, like, listen, we don't need to start till 9 o'clock. And they were like, 9, what? And
I'm because walleye fishing, right? It only happens in low light periods.
Well, we got to be on the water at 6. Nope, we can be on at 9. I said the best fishing, and some of that's moon phases and different stuff like that. But I told them, like, hey, some of our best fishing has been at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And they're like, okay, all right, we'll trust you. And then we go out, we're catching fish in the middle of the afternoon, and they think it's the greatest thing ever, right?
Yeah.
And so the bobber bite can be a lot of fun. You do a lot of bobber fishing because you have to when you're fishing on top of reefs. But also last year I had a lot of success throwing just swim baits and just slow rolling them over top of the, you know, the boulders. It's not something super easy for clients to do, but a fisherman who's pretty, you know, can do things can usually handle it. It's a super fun way of catching them. And then as time progresses in June, they start to kind of pull off the rocks. They're always going to be near them still, but those bugs and different things kind of start to happen, and the young of the year perch start to move off. The crayfish obviously are molting. And then that's when you can kind of start transitioning and doing some different stuff, you know, whether it's, you know, pulling rigs or, you know, spinners or even casting and doing some different things at some of those areas. So it's just fun to have that transition, you know, and that's what I really enjoy too, is, you know, that. And, you know, this is just, you know, this came up last year too. And I mean, obviously technology plays a huge role for all of us, fishing guides, tournament anglers, fishermen, everything. And you know, but as a fishing guide, this came from a client last year, and we got done fishing, and they said, you know, what we really appreciated was you didn't sit and stare at your screen the whole time, you know? And I think I love forward facing sonar. There's so many things about it. I love it. But I have found that there are times people want to have, it goes back to that, got to be able to carry a conversation on with people. And it was really, and it made me think back and realize, like, okay, remember, this is about giving people a great experience. And I said, well, why'd you say that? And they said, because we had great conversation the whole time. We laughed. We caught fish throughout the trip. It wasn't all about pointing and throwing bobbers where we need to throw bobbers. And I thought, you know, something that's also, you got to cater your trip towards the people you have in your boat. And if you got people who are diehard fishermen, then yeah, maybe that's what you do. And you're hunting them out and you're doing those things. But then you got the person in the boat who just wants to have a great relaxing trip in the morning. And then you do that. And so, I mean, that's, I think one of the fun things about Vermilion is the water is still, it's pretty tainted still. There's some, you know, taconite and stuff in the water still. And it still has that little bit of a brown tint to it. And so, like, I have enjoyed the fact that sometimes in July, I don't have to turn my forward-facing sonar on sometimes. And I can literally just get on a brake line and I can start hunting for fish with my side imaging. And we can pull spinners and bottom bouncers. We can pull rigs, crankbaits. We can cast at them. We can do different things. And it still has kind of kept me kind of, oh, I don't know, just – it's kept me with a good foundation when it comes to fishing and feeling like I don't have to be solely reliant on that piece of technology. I love it. It's great. I use it. But at the same time, like, I don't always need it, and I can use these other things and still feel like I'm going to be successful as a fisherman.
One thing about Vermilion, like, you know, it's a walleye factory, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of smaller fish out there, and you can really, I mean, I feel like the little experience that I have out there, you know, time management, you know, you can spend a lot of time, you know, even on a good day when you're catching a lot of fish, you can spend a lot of time catching small fish, looking for big fish. What would you say? What is so, you know, some keys on Vermilion to finding bigger fish?
You know, I think, well, a couple different things. I think the two sides of the lake are very different. The west side, for example, the walleyes on the west side are more perch eaters. And you typically are going to catch more bigger fish on the west side of the lake, which we call the cook side. And it's just the fish run bigger over there. So versus the east side has a lot more, you know, smaller fish. You are going to catch some bigger ones on the east side as well. But there's much bigger water on the east side. And then what happens, I think, in the summertime is a lot of those fish really spread out. And you got to really be pretty dialed in on, like, time of day, you know, where those fish are going to slide up in the evening up on the top of a reef or the edge of the reef, because during the day they slide off. But they might slide up in the middle of the day, but it's kind of one of those deals. Like, if that's the case, you're probably going to have to use the technology you got to try to figure that out and catch them. You know, so for me, like, if you want to go catch bigger fish, you know, the west side is definitely going to be more apt to catching on average bigger ones. And even the keepers you catch on the west side are typically bigger. You don't catch as many smaller ones. Now, if you want to go catch a meal of fish, the east side is probably going to be a little bit more predictable and so on. But as you work your way west, you get into places like Fraser Bay, you get into Head of the Lakes, you get into Wolf Bay, Niles Bay, and some of those areas, you got, just seems like the amount of bigger fish is there. And with them eating perch, I think that's a big part of it too. The fish, I think, just naturally get fatter because they're eating those versus just eating, you know, a bunch of crayfish on the bottom. So that's a big thing for me. The second thing would be just, you know, taking advantage of time of day, especially you get into the summer months. Like I said, June can be very magical. But then you get into July and August, and it gets tougher. It gets a little bit tougher catching fish, unless not necessarily catching fish, but catching bigger fish, at 11 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it depends on conditions. You get the right day and whatnot, you can do that. But, from there, then it's taking advantage of time of day. And we've had some just absolutely unbelievable trips. At 6:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, you're out those fish. And what I find is those fish then they are in bottleneck areas coming off of weed lines and areas where you find the bait, right? And so where you find those clouds of perch, you are going to find big walleyes. And we filmed a guide life show, which is one of our things we do on YouTube as a guide service. And one morning, and we pulled in there, and it was just these massive clouds of, 2.5 to 4 inch perch. And inside these clouds were all these huge marks. And it was literally every cast with a jigging wrap, just boom, there's one. And every fish was 23, 26. And they were just like boom, 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 boom. And we've been able to replicate that now. Mornings, evenings, where those fish, it's like hunting, these fish are going to slide up onto this saddle in the evening. They're going to slide up into this bottleneck. They're going to come off this weed line, and you just got to be there, and you got to be able to have a few of those spots. And some nights they hit, some nights they don't, some mornings the same thing. But I have found that's when we typically catch our biggest ones, more middle of the summer. And then just sometimes upsizing your presentation, like lead core out there is it's a really big thing, in August and September. People catch a ton of fish. They go to Vermilion, do pull lead core. It's a great, great, trolling bite. But you're going to catch a ton of small ones. You don't catch a lot of big ones, but when you start upsizing your bait, you start putting, a bigger, shatter wrap on, or, a deeper husky, deep diving husky jerk, or, something along those lines, that seems to obviously up your chances of catching a little bit bigger fish as well. It decreases your chances of maybe catching the smaller ones. But once again, I more so go back to what part of the lake you're fishing, the time of year that you're fishing there, and then how you attack it with the time of day seems to be really big factors in catching big fish out there. But I've also picked up on things, things along the way, just fishing some tournaments out there and such too, where, if you do have the technology with forward facing sonar and some of those things, and you're good with it, you can catch big fish in those rocks in the middle of August, in the middle of July at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but you really got to be hunting them, and you got to be super patient. And everybody thinks stained water and all this kind of stuff, and those fish are going to bite all day. But they're still walleyes. They're still temperamental. But there's some big bags that can come out of that, if you do it right, and you know what you're doing. So if I was going up there and I was more of on the novice end of things, I would more do what I talked about there. But if I was going up there and I was a really good fisherman, I had all that technology, use it to your advantage, because you can still catch some really, really nice ones.
Vermilion definitely fascinates me. It's kind of like a bucket list destination, I feel like. I mean, it's just kind of, it's kind of a ways over there. Even if you're from Minnesota, it's up north. Yep. Like you said, when you get there, it's like Canadian Shield. You don't even feel like you're in Minnesota anymore. It kind of takes you away, or makes you feel like you're not even where you're at. And it's just really fascinating that way. It's got such a great vibe like that. But yeah, it's full, full of fish. And talking about, I don't want to say that it's like not even a fun time to catch smaller fish, because like you said, I mean, for some people, and myself included, just depends on the scenario. But catching a whole bunch of fish, even if they're smaller, is still so fun. Any anglers that come from somewhere where they have a tough time catching a walleye, on wherever their home lake is, right? There's plenty of places like that where it's tough to catch walleyes. You go to a place where you can, in a weekend family trip, put your hands on, 20 years worth of walleyes if you'd have stayed home, to fish. It just, you just hardly can beat it. I can remember just like last year, the year before, going over there to film with Jason. And we got out there one evening. I mean, we didn't really have anything going. We're just kind of scouting it out, and we were by ourselves, and we just got into this one spot. I think we were, I think as you described, we were on the eastern half of the lake.
Yep.
But we got in this spot. We had active target down. We saw some fish on a break line, and we hit spot lock. And I think, we just caught a pile of them. We never took come off spot lock, and there was like three of us in the boat. We weren't filming or anything at that time. We were just kind of scouting it out, and we got to laughing, and we were throwing jigs, and just a jig and 6-pound mono, and I think we probably caught like 40 some walleyes without coming off spot lock. And really, that school of fish on active target might have been the biggest school of walleyes I've ever seen. Like,
oh yeah,
that electronics have ever shown me,
Yes.
And I mean, it really had a big impact on me. Like, that lake is, it's a factory. Like, it's just loaded with life. And that experience in itself was really cool, and probably the biggest fish we caught out of that school was maybe like 16, 17 inches, right? A lot of them were that size, but that was like
yep.
the top end. But man, every one of us was just having a ball. I mean, it was the best way of spending our time at that time. Like, we didn't have time to run around the lake. We were going to do that the next day, but it was just like, definitely one of those experiences where at the time we were just windmilling them and we could care less that they weren't very big, but we had one heck of a fish fry out of that deal.
It could be a pretty special lake. I mean, a lot of lakes have those things, but, there's some moments out there, time of day or whatever. And like, I've had some times in the evenings where it's just unbelievable. And like you said, you're maybe not catching all giants or whatever, and you're catching 12 to 16, 17 inches, but it's just unbelievable. And the fish are in there. And I think it's a lake where you just gotta be patient and you got to do your time and you got to understand, and there's some just general sweet spots, you got your community spots, but there's some just sweet spots out there. And I think what impresses me the most out there is just how respectful people are of space out there. And guys are respectful to each other about it, and customers and people in the boats. And it's a big lake, but it's not huge. It's very expansive, but that's the neat thing about it too. And like, everybody's out there and everybody's like super relaxed over there. It's just way different. That's what Billy Rosner, he always says, welcome to stress-free guiding. And I laugh and I'm like, but he's right. Cause you get these people in your boat and they're there for a whole week and they may hop in your boat on Sunday morning. And that's just like, that's their time to just relax, especially if it's a dad and some kids. Cause the dad's like, I don't have to tie any lines. I don't have to bait any hooks. I'm just here to fish. You're there to help manage my kids. And it's awesome. It's great. And people just kind of, and like you were said, like, you go going around on that lake and you start looking around, you're seeing cliffs and eagles and wildlife, and then all of a sudden you're fishing out in the middle of nowhere and there isn't a single house anywhere, and you're getting onto a school of walleyes or smallmouth, and people just kind of like, I don't know, they just kind of fall into this mode of like, this is just unbelievable. And I think that's why if you ask people about it, and you said it's kind of up in that little corner and everybody forgets about it, but people who know Lake Vermilion, who have done it and have been there, every single one of them says, I don't just go there once, we go there every year.
Oh, and yeah. And we haven't even mentioned like muskies or anything like that. I mean,
no,
it's
gosh,
like,
no.
It's
no,
like the capital city of giant muskies in Minnesota.
Yes.
My gosh.
Yeah. It is one of those places that it sucks people in. It really does. And I try to explain that to people, and I've explained that to my guide buddies over here, and they're like, why would you? And I'm like, until you go there and you spend a week there, Then you can judge me, because I said, otherwise, once you spend a week there, trust me, you will want to be here more often.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a cool place. It's definitely, yeah, it is. It's fascinating. And it looks fascinating on electronics. The lake map is cool. I mean, just the weird, or just the structure, it's all that hard bottom and the rocks and the,
yep.
and the deep water and the shallow water and the, everything, Yeah. 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 No, I love it. Well, let's wrap this thing up here. We're so good on time, and we'll have to do this again, Jason, but I appreciate the stories. I can take so much away from that. And, and hearing about Vermilion, it's just one of those places, but just all of northern Minnesota, you talk about Leech Lake and that, it's just really kind of, those lakes are kind of the marquees that represent the whole area. And, not to mention all the small lakes in between there and just all that just offers, more of the same or more good fishing as well. The whole area, but anyways, anything else that pops into your mind, go ahead. Otherwise, for the sake of time, dude, great conversation. I appreciate it. Let everybody know if they have questions or inquiries or just want to look you up, where they can find you.
Yeah, no, like I said, I thank you for the opportunity. I mean, I've known Jason for many years now, and we used to always joke about, I met Jason at Ice Shots. It was a clam event, and Jason Mitchell, Jason Durham, Jason Rylander, myself, we call it the Jason Show, and we always joke we should all be the boat someday. But, you know, I just have that opportunity to meet those people. But thanks for having me. This is obviously, it's one of those deals. I'm an avid listener of the podcast, so I'll be able to come on here and do this was a special deal. And for me, like I said, you know, anytime people are interested and want to reach out, whether it's questions about Vermilion, questions about Leech, questions about getting into guiding, helping run a guide service, I've done a lot of it, and I've experienced a lot of it, and with the ups and the downs and everything, but I'm always there to help people and educate people as much as I can. So best way to get a hold of me is just, you know, either looking me up on Facebook or any of those types of things, Facebook, Instagram, also on the X as well. I don't do as much on the X, that's more for coaching, but and then otherwise just, you know, leisureoutdooradventures.com is our website. My email is just jasonf@leisureoutdooradventures.com, and my cell phone is 507-450-7986. And at any time, whether you're interested in talking fishing, talking guiding, want to book a trip, I got myself another guide by the name of Justin Cromie over on Vermilion, and we're excited. This will be my fifth year over there, and I'm super stoked to get over there. I'm going to probably head over here in a couple weeks, get my camper all set up and ready to rock. I'm at Spring Bay Resort, and it is awesome. I wake up in the morning, I make myself breakfast, I have a cup of coffee, I walk down the hill, my boat's sitting in the boat lift, I hop in the boat, and I watch the sunrise come up on Lake Vermilion, and it is it's a special place. It's a special deal. So, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, and it just didn't happen overnight. It took a lot of hard work and to get to this point, but you got to kind of say your prayers and have your blessings for what you got in life, and I'm very fortunate to be part of Leisure Outdoor Adventures Guide Team and have the life I have and the family I have as well.
Right on, man. Yeah, and it's right around the corner. You know, June on Vermilion is going to be here before we know it, man. I'm telling you, it's an exciting time for sure. Well, let's do it again, Jason. Be good, though. Good luck out there this year. And, dude, I'll let you go for real this time, man. I appreciate it.
Sounds good, man. Thank you.